Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another podcast. I'm here with Peter, let me get your name right, Ratledge.
Correct.
Okay. I don't know why I had a hard time spelling it when I was writing this out.
I think I know a lot of people do. Yeah. I normally just, people often ask, and I just say rat on a ledge. Take it from there.
This is, what a great start. Mm.
I went to America once, and someone read my name out because I think we were getting on a tour bus.
Yeah.
And they read it as Retago. And I have no idea how you could interpret. I
don't know Peter where the Retago.
Yeah.
Well, I'll forever know you as that now.
Mm.
Brilliant. So Peter is a producer here at Qualy since 2022. And I was reading you've recently been accepted in the BAFTA Connect.
That is correct.
Yeah. Now, I was reading that it's one of your highlights. You've always wanted to be a part of it. So what was that like, finally being accepted?
No, it was great. So Connect is like a new thing that BAFTA's done quite recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's effectively for people who've been working in the industry for a couple of years. So I started in the industry proper at the beginning of 2020.
Okay.
And so I've been working for a couple of years, but not so many that I'd be considered massively experienced. So Connect is like a really good, essentially like an opportunity for people who are in that sort of like mid-level of expertise to network and grow professionally. So I was really, really pleased when I got that.
And I saw a picture of you with the award.
Yeah. So before I got into professionally into games, some friends and I would often do game jams and things in our spare time. And I used to live in Guildford, which was really, really good for that because there's loads of studios all around there. So that I got a very sneaky picture with Media Molecules, BAFTA Award, because they held a couple of game jams in their offices.
Okay.
So I've been in there a couple of times working on some projects, which was quite fun.
Nice. Well, I was discovering a lot as I was diving deep into your past. Mm. The previous guest will know that I'm quite thorough, so we'll see what happens. Now, I want to go all the way back. Let's start from the beginning, the early years. And we were talking earlier about Hercules, the film, but also the game. And then
Classic.
You went back and looked at it. And I looked at it again, and it wasn't quite what I remembered.
Yeah, definitely rose-tinted glasses, I think, looking back. I mean, it's still really, really good. I think like the animation quality in that game is superb.
Yeah.
There's a lot of games that I sort of barely remember growing up, that I remember playing and then have kind of sort of like fallen into the back of my memory. I think that's one of them.
Yeah.
I think that the very first game I played was Spyro the Dragon, the original on the PS1. I must have probably been like maybe about 3 years old, I think, when my older brother got a PS1.
Okay.
And like a couple of games with that, and then I just sort of absorbed. I can't remember exactly how old when I saw Spyro, but I don't remember not knowing that Spyro the Dragon exists.
Right. So were you watching before you were playing?
Probably.
Yeah.
But I imagine I was playing
a little bit,
because it doesn't take too long to reach over and grab a controller.
And it's quite funny, isn't it, how we moved from watching our family play games to playing them to now watching live streamers play games, then playing them. It's almost a very similar entry level into gaming.
Yeah, 100%.
That's awesome. So so PlayStation 1, that was your first console?
Yeah.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so much younger than me. Incredible. And did you stay on the PlayStation line as you were getting older, or did you switch to Xbox, be one of those?
Pretty much. So I remember like having an original PlayStation, and Spyro the Dragon and Crash Bandicoot particularly warped. Like Crash Warped is probably, I think, one of my favorite games ever.
Okay.
It's like superb. And then when I was a bit older, I think we needed to get a DVD player for the house, the PS2, has one there.
Yes.
So we got a PS2.
Did you have to sell that? Did you have to say, this is a DVD player as well?
At the time, I wasn't 100% aware, but I think we said, we can get rid of the PlayStation 1 and we'll get a PS2. It'll be really, it'll be good. It still runs all the PS1 games. Let's do it. And then I found out that it was a DVD player. And I think we're at the shops at the same time, I was like, just buy this. It's so much better.
Get this one. Yeah.
Good job, Sony. Good job.
And what age was that? Was that in the teenage years?
No, that would have still, but I must have been, because I mean, that would be like early early 2000s, because I think PS2 came out in like 2000.
Okay.
So we probably got it maybe a year or two after that point. So I'd have been like 7 or 8.
Right.
To be honest, like, so I have very little knowledge, but I was just like, this disc that does the films, also it does the games and the films. Let's get that.
Yeah.
And then like, a few years after that, I sort of saved up like pocket money and begged a lot.
Yeah.
And we got a GameCube.
Okay.
Which I didn't play a ton of games, but I had like the staples, yeah, right, with like Smash Bros. And Mario Kart and Zelda Wind Waker and things like that.
Right.
So I didn't dive hugely into Nintendo stuff until, yeah, I was a bit older. But
okay.
But the GameCube was
the GameCube was the one. So and you went from PlayStation 2, GameCube. Did you move to PC? Was it later in your teenage years as you got to university or college?
Basically, yeah. So I think we waited for the PS3 to cheapen up a bit, because I remember it being ludicrously expensive at launch compared to competitors, but I really, really wanted one.
Yeah.
Also because it was a Blu-ray player. I remember that. Yeah, and I was like,
Blu-ray.
You know those better films?
What was the perk of having a Blu-ray again? Was it just the higher quality?
Yeah, you can get a lot more data on the CD.
That was it, the data.
Because the blue wavelength is higher frequency than red wavelength, which I think is what DVD players use. So you can fit more data on the same amount of space on a disc.
Right.
Which is what, which is why you get higher resolutions and things. And
this has become educational for me.
That's why I think the 360, there are a couple of games that you'd have to swap disc halfway through.
Right.
Whereas you wouldn't, most games on the PS3, you wouldn't, because it could store a bit more.
Well, okay.
But yeah, I remember getting that, but then sort of towards, I really enjoyed playing on PS3, and then as like that, the next console generation was coming, and I was at uni by the time. The PS4 was on the way, and I was thinking, I really want a PS4, but I'd really want to get more into PC gaming, because I had an old laptop that I think it was my brother's that I was using for schoolwork and uni work,
yeah,
and it couldn't really run anything.
Right.
I think I had a copy of Minecraft, and it could just
really
run Minecraft. And I think that was that.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to get into PC gaming proper.
Yeah. So before we then move on maybe to university days, where you'd, I suppose, mainly get into PC.
Yeah.
What were the games as a teenager, or the game that you played and thought, do you know what? This is really great. This might be something that I could get into. Or was that not a thought at the time? You were just enjoying it?
You mean like professionally?
Yeah.
Or maybe
there's a career there.
Like, so I think I'd... Yeah, during like the sort of like the PS2 era, I was just like playing games and enjoying them and not really thinking much, about it. And then, yeah, I think that when the PS3 came out, I must have been like 11 or 12. So I probably got it when I was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And I distinctly, that was like when I first started like consuming like games media online, because I was thinking, the console's not cheap. I want to know what games are good on this system.
Okay.
And then I found out about Elder Scrolls, because I went to somebody else's house and saw them playing Oblivion on their PC.
Yes, we were talking about this earlier,
yeah,
and how great that game is.
Yeah, Elder Scrolls is like...
Yeah.
Oblivion in particular is just so good.
Do you know what? I didn't even know Patrick Stewart was the voice for so long.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As an actor, I had no idea. But I think... It was, for me, the story, I don't know about you, but the story, also the lighting at the time.
Yeah, there's tons of bloom in that game. I mean, it's really good, but there's like loads of bloom, but I think it works. I think we were talking earlier about the, apart with the exception of Skyrim, right? Well, the Elder Scrolls games usually start off in the prison.
Yes.
And the bit where you walk out from, you escape from the Imperial City prison in Oblivion. I never really played an open world RPG before. I think that I'd played I think GTA,
right,
like San Andreas on the PS2 prior,
right,
but back then, it's, you know, it still doesn't look amazing. It's like impressive for the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But then getting a next gen console at that point, and then walking out that door and having like that color transition from like sort of dark slimy greens on the walls of the sewers, and then you go out and it's so bright, so nice, and then realizing, oh my god, I can go in any direction.
Like, yeah,
that was.
It was all the different guilds as well, the arena. Oh, what a game! Yeah. Maybe they'll remaster another one. So, playing all these games, you saw at friend's house Elder Scrolls.
Yeah.
Did you then get Elder Scrolls off the back of that?
Pretty much, yeah. It was like one of the titles that was, I guess, like released quite early in the PS3, sort of life cycle. And that was the one I was like most interested in. So I think there was MotorStorm and Resistance that I looked quite good at the time.
Yeah.
And then Oblivion, I thought, okay, this will be like the game. This is the time sink when I realized that how many features are in that game. Like, you can like pick locks or like, you know, just trade stuff.
Yes.
I remember, for the first playthrough, I spent ages just going out hunting deer and just selling the meat. You sell it for nothing. You get like one gold piece a pop. But I was like, yes, I'm officially
money.
I'm a meat trader now.
That's a similar thing in Minecraft. I know you mentioned you sort of played it a bit. There was an add-on called Townie. I don't know if you played it, the Townie add-on. Hmm. And it was a time when they added villagers to the game as well. I don't know if you remember that point, but there was villagers. They sort of looked like pig men. And you could trade items to them and they would give you back a different item. Mm. And there was one villager who you could give coal to, and they would give you back saddles. And in this townie add-on, the saddle was worth like a lot of money. Mm. So, you know, you'd build like coal farms. I'd get that one villager and put them in a house and then just keep... I was a teenager, man. I was putting this villager in some sort of prison while I was trying to get more gold. The things you did, right, when you were younger.
Yeah, true.
But I completely get the new sort of open world experience and it being a point in memory where I remember gaming being just so amazing and definitely wanting to be in those worlds.
That was definitely a point for me as well, that like, because I was looking at, I was actually trying to consider what games were best to buy for this new system that I really, really wanted.
Yeah.
When I actually started consuming a lot of games media and going on like GameSpot and game trailers back then, rest in peace, and IGN.
Yeah.
And with Oblivion in particular, they released like a sort of a mini documentary of like development and stuff. And they had interviews with Todd Howard and how the games are made.
Yeah.
And I'd never really considered that prior. I guess, like, and then I started following all of that like really, really closely.
Right.
When I was at school, being like, who made what, and who does Sony own in terms of, developers, and what have they got that's coming up down the pipeline? And actually, like, that was my first sort of, I guess, appreciation of development rather than just
behind the
games
the scenes
themselves.
And was that, would you say, a gateway then?
I think so. Yeah. I remember because Oblivion's not a perfect game.
No.
There are a lot of things broken in it. And I think, compared to some games that I played prior, which had like, a lot less content, but that content was a bit more smooth. Seeing like a game like Oblivion that was so huge and you could do everything, but like rough edges and all, right? There's certain times when like the physics just totally breaks or, the character animations look, a bit off at times. It sort of like made me appreciate that, like how much work goes into making sure that stuff is good.
Yeah.
And Oblivion is like still one of my favorite games ever, almost because of some of these like weird quirks. That
gives it its charm.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving now into university, you went to a university near where you lived, right? In Guildford. What was that like with gaming? And also, if we talk about maybe friends groups, were they centered around people who play games, or
not massively? So,
or were you one of those closet gamers? I was one of those.
Yeah. So my housemates played a lot, and so I brought my old GameCube to uni with me, and we'd like host like Mario Kart okay. tournaments and things. But it's like fairly close knit. Mm-hmm. So I went to I went to Royal Holloway to study computer science because I thought this is the best degree. If I want to go into games professionally, I should do this. And I'd never done any programming in my life beforehand, and I probably should have done.
Okay.
Because I realized quite early on, I realized I really don't enjoy programming. This isn't for me.
Okay.
I think in my second year we had like a group project module, which involved like a bit of like project management to it. So it was like I think we were divided into like groups of five or six, and we had like a month or two, a couple of months to work on a project, and we were doing it in sprints and doing like planning poker and working out tasks and planning out who's going to do what task and when like milestones will be delivered, which is very project managery, producery stuff. And I really enjoyed that module, despite really not enjoying the programming side of things. Which I think, like, as I was, you know, when I was leaving uni and I was trying to think what I wanted to do, I really, really wanted to move into games, but not be a programmer.
Okay, so leaving university, you didn't want to code, you didn't want to do anything like that, but you had that bit of experience, though, producing. What was the opportunity that presented itself leaving university, or did you have to go out and sort of get it?
My degree wasn't really games focused, and there weren't many modules that were particularly games focused. So really, like, luckily I was living with my parents in Guildford at the time, which is a big game dev town in the UK. Media Molecule operate there. Ubisoft has a publishing office, EA, Criterion Games are there, Supermassive Games are there. So there's a lot of talent in that area, and because of that, there's quite a strong like game jamming community.
Okay.
So when I left uni, I was looking for, I guess, like any job really to make some money at the time. And I found like a junior project management position at a gambling company.
Okay.
It wasn't really the industry I wanted to go into. I'm not a fan of gambling. But there's enough technical crossover that I thought I could learn on this job while looking for more like games focused positions.
Right.
So I was doing that, and then I joined this Guildford Game Jam Society, which would often, like, you know, every couple of months host like a game jam session. I made a lot of friends who are, you know, various teams, like games teams working around Guildford, who are like showing me the ropes and like, here's how you use Unity, here's how you change stuff in Engine, and, you know, designing a few like little small games over a few weekends, which like builds up my confidence a bit.
So really, that shows how important community is, really, and those game jams as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially for people coming out of university like yourself, who really want to get into the industry but just don't know where to begin.
That's definitely a really strong way to do it. I was trying to build up like a portfolio of myself, and I made like an itch.io page with all the weird wacky projects that I'd worked on and stuff. Put them in that, and going to these events, talking to people, just asking anybody for advice on like how to put a CV together that's more games focused, highlights that I'm really, really interested in this stuff, I desperately want to work in this business. And that alongside some of the, some of the more project management skills that I was getting from outside of games, like agile development and working with, different programming teams and QA teams, although not games focused, there's a lot of sort of carryover in terms of skills. Kept doing that until I found a position in Brighton for a 6 months contract.
Okay.
Working at Future Lab.
Right.
And that was great. So I was there. I started at the very beginning of 2020, working in Brighton, and worked on DLC for PC Building Simulator.
Right. Okay.
It was quite fun. Like, at first, I've learned so much more about the inner workings of PCs, despite having a computer science degree. I'd never built one myself, and so I've built countless in simulated form.
Right. So you must know everything. Yeah. I'll come to you. Now, before we go on to what happened after that, I've got something for you. Now, last time on this podcast, I gave the guest questions.
Okay.
And they got 10 out of 10. Now, the questions were quite easy. So this time, and I want everyone to play at home as well, and you can comment below the answers as we go along. No cheating. What I've got here are a couple of questions about games.
Okay.
And and what we're going to do is we're going to ask you these questions. We're going to see how many you get. Okay. So this is going to test your game knowledge. These are quite obscure. Mm. As I was doing these, I did think these are quite hard, but here we go. Right. Question one.
Mm-hmm.
Which god confronted Kratos at the end of God of War 2018?
Thor.
Correct. Round of applause. It gets a lot harder. Did you get it at home? I'm sure you did. And of course, we've just had the next installment.
Yeah, I started playing it recently. Yeah? It's really good.
Yeah? Okay.
It's really good.
I haven't played it yet. I should. Okay. Question two. Where does Super Mario World take place?
In the Mushroom Kingdom. No.
Are you sure?
I thought I was sure.
The answer is Dinosaur Land.
Oh, Christ.
I didn't know this either. Okay. Question three. What nationality is Call of Duty character Soap McIntavish? McTavish.
He's Scottish. Yeah. Very Scottish.
Okay. No hate for me getting that wrong.
I've not actually played the new ones.
Okay.
I've played the original Modern Warfare.
Right.
Modern Warfare 2, which are phenomenal.
Back in the console days.
Yeah. I still need to get this on my backlog to actually get into some of the new ones.
Okay. I should give them a go. Now, this one might be quite difficult. I'm not sure if you're into this, but which football player is on the cover of FIFA 17?
Don't know. Is it? They changed it to Mbappe recently, like was it 2 years ago? So maybe 17. I'm going to say Messi.
Okay. Let me give you a clue, and a clue for those watching. I believe he's Spanish.
I don't know then. I'm not sure.
Marco Reyes.
Oh, right. Okay.
He's Spanish, right? Okay, we might have to cut that bit.
Football's not my strong suit, sorry.
I didn't think so. Right, okay. Next one. What is the name of John Marston's wife in Red Dead Redemption?
Oh my God, Abigail.
Yes, it is. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I don't mean this to be mean, but you're doing better than I thought. When I was writing these down, I was like, these are obscure, but here we are. In Metal Gear Solid, what is Octocon's real name?
Octocon, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Not played the original.
Hal Emmerich.
Oh.
Okay. And last question. Now, this is a very tricky one.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. Who runs Dodo Airlines in Animal Crossing New Horizons?
No.
Do any of you know?
I think you've picked all of the games that I've been like, I should play that, and yeah. I just haven't got around to
well,
it.
Well, now it's a reminder to bring up the list. Yeah. The answer is Orville and Wilbur. There you go. So you did quite well. You did quite well.
Did I though?
You did. You did quite well. I wonder if anyone else did better in the comments. But they were quite difficult. So there it is. Right. So working at Future Labs.
Mm. Future Lab. Yeah.
Future Lab, sorry. 6 months there, you learned all about PCs, the inner workings of them.
Mm.
What were the steps or the path that led you to Quali?
So I was on like a fixed contract at Future Lab, and we were sort of like wrapping up the work on the DLC.
Yeah.
And I was trying to... I was trying to think where I wanted to go after that. And I'd not really heard of Quali prior to looking. And then I saw Quali, like, was hiring for position online that was like a product manager for, I think it was sort of like new projects, PC and console. And okay. I was looking on the website at the time, and I was thinking Qualy doesn't really do any PC console stuff. This is unusual. And I sort of had a chat, and they said, yeah, we're founding like a brand new department for PC and console publishing. Would you be interested in joining? The position at the moment, it would be just me to start.
Okay.
And then the team was going to expand like quite quickly after that.
So you were the first.
Yeah, yeah. So
you were the spark.
I like to imagine.
Yeah, so. You're the spark.
I sort of started then my role was sort of like try and do a little bit of everything.
Okay.
It was quite haphazard at the beginning, like just trying to talk to a few developers, see if there's anything interesting that we might want to sign, or like try and build out the department further.
Yeah.
Max joined about a month after I started, which was extremely helpful.
Yes.
Max has got so many years of experience that he could sort of take the reins for the department.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember sort of after chatting to Jason, David, and Brian Davis at the company about the role, and just thinking like that's like a perfect opportunity. It's like a brand new division for the company.
Yeah.
Going into PC and console indie publishing, and just being like the first person through the door.
Yeah,
just seemed like just the best opportunity in the world.
Yeah.
So that's me. I'm here. I think I. As the department was sort of filling out, I think I spoke to Max and said, I think production is definitely the direction I want to move in.
Yeah.
Because my role was kind of like, sort of because it was very general.
Yeah.
I was sort of like doing a little bit of everything, but I couldn't really do anything particularly well because I was like stretched.
So spread, yeah.
So, as we built that, I sort of joined the production team. And that's me.
Awesome.
I'm now producer here at Qualy.
So I want to talk about one of your latest games produced and released, Scathe.
Mm.
So did you take it from beginning to release? Was it sort of your...
Yeah, so the scouting team that we have here sort of initially chatted to Chris, Tim and Manu, the devs at Damage State. I think they found some... they posted a few images and things online, but it was very early in development at that point. I sort of jumped on the project once we signed as the producer attached to Scathe.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working with the team ever since.
Yeah.
Bringing the game up to launch and
beyond,
Yeah, and doing post-launch support and things like that.
And that's a point, actually. There is a patch that came out recently. I'll post it up in a card. Do check it out. So many incredible changes that really elevate the game.
Yeah, yeah. So we a big part of that was we were trying to look at how people were playing the game, what they're enjoying, what they don't like, are there any pain points, and sort of like focusing, because it's a very, very small team. Damage State is essentially three guys.
Yeah.
With Chris as the sole programmer, and he's a wizard. I love you, Chris. You're amazing.
You get a good tight zoom for that one.
Where was I going with this? I was just thinking about how amazing the team are. So we'll have a chat with them and look at, what's the... essentially, like, what we can look at from, like, how people are playing the game and what we can do to basically make the game as best as it can be.
Yeah.
So one of the big things we did was, like, make a lot of improvements to the map and added a fast travel system, making sure players can sort of navigate their way around the maze that is...
Yeah,
The map in Scathe quite well.
Yeah, yeah. Do check out the video. It has all the details, and it doesn't stop there, right?
No,
there'll be more as we go on in the future. So,
100%.
Watch this space, really. Now, at the end of every show we do, I'd like to just get a bit of advice from you for those maybe just out of university, or even starting university, or even people later in life that are looking for a career change. As a producer, what are certain things that you would look for when hiring? And how much does university and experience play a part in that?
from what I've learned is experience is quite useful, but the having the right attitude is really important. A lot of production is being very analytical about things and trying to identify a potential issue a long time before it might come up, mm-hmm. and then being very proactive in trying to take steps to avoid it.
Yeah.
So, whenever you're looking at sort of a design document or discussing technical details of the programmer, trying to be very analytical about how this might affect the project as a whole, because mm-hmm. You have to. There's certain really, really cool design ideas or something that you might look at and you think this is really, really good, but you need to sort of look above the project and be is this gonna make the game better
as a whole,
and then working out if it does, what's the best way to use what you've got to make sure that it happens, because I think every producer would love more time and more time, more money, more people to make the game they'd want to make. But it's all about managing those resources and making sure that you what you've got. If you're one programmer and you've only got 2 months for your project, making sure that you spend those 2 months making the game at the best it can be.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Now, as we come to a close, I asked our last guest to give me a question that I'll give to the next guest. And I'm going to ask the same of you after. Okay. You know who the last guest was, but normally you wouldn't. They asked, what game do you think you'd play together that you would beat them at?
I'd beat them at.
Yeah.
I know my previous guest was Maddie. So, and I tend to play a fair amount of FPSs. And Maddie plays a few, but I reckon 1v1 me on Rust.
1v1 on Rust, that's the call.
Modern Warfare 2, 1v1 we Rust.
Okay.
I think I could do all right.
Rust, Modern Warfare 2, I like it. Now, something, of course, I need from you, a question for the next guest. You don't know who it is, but what question would you give them? And it can be, doesn't have to be to a gaming, it could be anything.
What is your absolute favorite bad game?
What is your favorite bad game?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Peter, very much for being on. I do appreciate it. For those of you watching at home, we have an array of games that are announced. We have some that have come out already. We're talking about Scathe. We've got more to come. Make sure you subscribe. Do you like the video? Comment. Let us know how many you got right of the questions earlier. Peter, you did all right.
I did amazing, to be honest. I was quite embarrassed with that performance.
But anyway, thank you guys. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Cheers.